Hi, I'm Denny Boynton for ArcCast, and today I'm here in the Fishbowl at TechEd Developer 2008. And joining me is Roy Osherov from TechMoc.
Typemoc.
And today we're going to be talking to Roy about one of the talks he's doing here. Roy, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself before we get started?
Okay, so I'm a developer at Typemoc, which is a company that's building the next generation of unit testing tools for developers in .NET. I'm responsible on building a new tool that I cannot talk about right now, but the company is pretty well known for a tool called Typemoc Isolator, which is all about isolating components for unit testing. Before that, I was a consultant. I did a lot of agile development consulting, a lot of training, and I worked as a developer and team lead for almost a decade now as a team lead.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I'm into various stuff in .NET, regular expressions, reflection, right, and a lot about process and how we do things.
Oh, okay. All right. So at Typemoc, what is your responsibility over the product there? What do you do on a daily basis there?
So I actually manage a team of developers that are building a new product, which unfortunately is currently under patent, so I cannot talk about that.
Understood.
We just have two teams there working on a couple of products, and we're just we're doing things in an agile manner. We're doing the XP / Scrum. We call it Scrumpy.
Mm-hmm. Scrumpy.
Scrumpy.
Excellent.
Just having fun. Just developing code is
okay.
The main love.
Excellent. That's great. So you're doing a talk tomorrow on designing for testability.
Yes.
And this is a particularly interesting subject because, especially just in the title, it sounds reversed. You know, usually you design and then you test that design, but what you're positing is that you actually begin the design process with testability in mind. So let's talk about that a little bit. When you say designing for testability, what is involved with that from the architectural standpoint?
So first, the main point that needs to come across is why would you want to test something in the first place? And I think we can all agree that having automated tests against your software is not a bad thing to have.
Okay.
It gives you a lot of things. The problem is that usually the design of software today, or as we build it, unless we build a test first, the design comes out in a way that's virtually untestable or really, really hard to test by default. Now, the simplest example is that, let's say that you have a component. So I have this thing there. I grabbed from one of the sponsors here. Hmm? And let's assume this is a class that we want to test.
Okay.
I don't know. Let's say it's a customer class. Now, if I was writing a test against this class, I would want to write a test that calls one of the methods and maybe gets a value back or tests the state of this class. The problem with design that is untestable is that usually a class will have some sort of service or dependency that relies upon. Let's say that the blue one here is a logging service. Now, the logging service may have a static method. Maybe it creates a new instance here, but it basically depends on it. Okay, it cannot live. It cannot do its actions without calling this dependency.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to write a unit test against this class, it would ultimately use this dependency underneath. The problem is that usually, a lot of times, a dependency needs configuration or is maybe hard to create. Let's say it's not a logging. Maybe the logging is done on a web service. Maybe it's an Exchange server that needs to get emails. And suddenly, calling a method outside of the real application gets you an exception for the wrong reasons. And the reasons are the dependency cannot be created, or you have to create a test that creates a dependency underneath, and that's really, really hard.
Mm-hmm.
Now, real applications don't look like that. They usually look kind of like this.
Okay.
And what a lot of people do, instead of testing each component separately, they will test everything together. The problem there is that you need to wait until the application is finished or largely finished until you can test these kind of things. Otherwise, nothing works.
Mm-hmm.
Either everything works or nothing works. And by that time, you may have a lot of bugs that you would not have found. Maybe much harder to find them and fix them. So the idea of designing for testability is that the design is allows you to separate dependencies. So that if I had this logger, I would be able to, during my tests, replace it with some other logger very easily, maybe with a line of code. and then maybe stub out that logger so it wouldn't do anything, and I can test this class. Maybe I would have several dependencies, and I can just insert them instead of the other dependencies.
Okay.
And then the only thing that mattered is this one. Everything else here doesn't really matter. Now, what kind of design usually is testable by default? It's design that is interface-based, because you can replace objects by implementing objects that implement the same interface.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say that the logger now is not a static method. It implements an interface called iLogger. Now, all I need to do in my test is to create my own class, or maybe using some sort of framework, something that implements iLogger, and then put that inside the class. So that's usually called dependency injection. So let's say I'm testing this class, and the idea of replacing something, I need to do that maybe through some sort of method, maybe constructor in mm-hmm. some sort. And I would create my own class, replace it with something that looks the same as that interface, and suddenly it's more testable. Testable designs by default are easy to replace. It's easy to replace things in them. Now, one of the things I'm going to talk about is not just ways how to make untestable designs right now more testable by refactoring it. I'm also going to talk about a big dilemma. Because in .NET and also in Java, there are now tools that just came in, but pretty new tools that would allow you to bypass that problem of dependency injection and having to use interfaces or mm-hmm. virtual methods to override things. And those tools will essentially say, look, I know you are depending on a logger. I will allow you to intercept the calls to the logger or replace it with a different logger, but you won't have to change the design. You won't have to add a method or a constructor or an interface just to be able to replace this.
Okay.
So one of the things that this causes is that a lot of people really like the idea that the design for testability will force you to create new interfaces and methods and so on. And they rely on the fact that you cannot test it to tell you that your design might need changing.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the, I think this is where we're, I think the world where we're going is going to into two separate places. People who will stick to designing by testability, that is, you will let the test drive your design. And the people who will use the tooling to create the design they want mm-hmm. could be just the same, just as good as a design with interfaces and so on. But they would have tools that would allow them to test things even if the design is not interface-based and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So the big dilemma is for a lot of people, they say, I like design for testability because it creates good designs for me. It forces me to do good design. And the dilemma is, well, let's say that you had tools that will allow you to test anything. Wouldn't you still do good design? Right.
Okay.
Would
sure.
you do crappy yeah. design just because you have a good tool?
Right.
Just because you have a car that can drive 300 miles an hour doesn't mean you're going to drive that in the street,
mm-hmm.
right? And this is one of the issues that I'm going to talk about, basically.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit. I'm really interested in hearing more about, because I think test first design and designing for testability is I think to most people and you know out there working, a relatively new concept. A lot of folks are still working under the, you know, basically you set out, you design to the business requirements, not to the testability. The testability is something that you think about when you get to that phase of the project.
Well, you design to the requirements overall anyway. The testability is an attribute of your design
mm-hmm.
for the use cases.
Mm-hmm.
The use cases are high level. It's how it works underneath that is testable.
Mm-hmm.
So it will still be designed, or let's say, you can design by high-level use cases and scenarios just as well. It's how you implement those, that design, that can be testable around
testable.
I
see. Okay. So you mentioned before you had some ideas about refactoring existing applications and making them more testable.
Yes.
So I think, you know, this is one of those topics when you hear it, you go, yeah, of course. I mean, why didn't I think of that? That mm-hmm. it makes so much sense. But for those folks out there who are struggling with these large applications that they've inherited and they look like the bands all kind of twisted together, what are some things that you can recommend that they do that can help them make that application more testable?
Okay, so let's be pragmatic here. For .NET and for Java, there are tools that and most companies cannot take the time to make that kind of investment and just say, look, we're just going to refactor all our code and put unit tests on it. Mostly a not feasible thing to do. I've only seen one company do that, and it still took a long time. They loved what they had after that.
Mm-hmm.
But because we have tooling now, stuff like TypeMock, or for Java, there is JMocket. And these things can mock out anything which is also static or private. So you don't have to make that big investment on refactoring existing code, unless you really want to, or just on parts of it. But there are languages where there are no such tools, for example, C++ and so on. And that's where I think these refactorings make even more sense, because there you don't have a choice. It's not like you decide, I want to do either a good design, I want to save the time, and I just want to get things done.
Mm-hmm.
And for those, there are a lot of techniques. One of the great books that I can recommend is called Working Effectively with Legacy Code by Michael Feathers.
Mm-hmm.
And that book is basically worth its weight in gold. I've learned so much from it. Another book is called XUnit Test Patterns, which holds a lot of patterns on how to write tests and how you can make your code testable and override things in it to replace with stuff. But let's talk about the basic things. Let's say that you have that class, and the class depends on a logger. So the yellow one is, let's say, the yellow one is the logger. The simplest thing you can do is to call, it's called extract interface.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is that the logger class now implements an interface, and now if you want to replace the logger, you create something that implements the iLogger interface. And now you need to make your code testable by adding a way to inject that interface into the class.
Okay.
Usually classes use either factories, or they take into constructor, or using properties of some sort, they would take the object to log against. So in your test, you would be able to either add a constructor or add a property that will set the logger to your own fake logger. Now, a fake logger is usually part of the test. It's a class you create, and it doesn't do anything.
kind of wish they had a ceiling on this
hopefully
place.
Hopefully the audio here is not disturbing the talk. Hopefully. So that's the simplest way. The nice thing about it is it's really safe.
Mm-hmm.
You can refactor and extract interfaces, and standard production code will work just the same.
Okay. Okay, that makes sense.
There are more elaborate examples. There are more elaborate examples. For example, how do you... Let's say the logger is now static. So there is no instance of a logger that's called. It's being called against a static method. So one thing you can do to make your code more testable, assuming you're not using any tooling, is to make the class that's under test, make sure it's not sealed, and make the methods that call the logger virtual. So let's say that you have a line that says logger.write, mm-hmm. whatever. Extract that into a separate method on the class under test. Make that method virtual.
Okay.
Because it's virtual, now in your test, you can actually override from the class you're
right.
testing.
Okay, that makes sense.
Override the virtual method and make it not do anything, mm-hmm. for example. And you've broken a dependency. Another thing you can do is to actually make the static method into an instance method. That is, keep the static method, but underneath, make it actually call an instance method. And your test will actually call the instance methods, and that can be replaced. So you can refactor your code, and it gets more elaborate. Sometimes it's harder, sometimes it's easier. The thing is that all these things can make your code, your code's design, more Lego-like, mm-hmm. if you will. And so everything is replaceable. And again, the dilemma is that sometimes people feel that they extract interfaces and such... just because it's for testing, and mm-hmm. no production code will ever use that. And that's the point where there is something to think about, where tooling can actually help, and where it gives you the ability to say, I'll design it this way, but when I want to, I can test it out, even though my design is untestable.
So you get a convergence of code that you're building for production
and the testing aspect.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that's what's going to happen. There is a big, it's not big, but there is a big dilemma in the, especially all.NET community, if you've heard about it,
uh-huh.
Whether design for testability or using tooling are actually, using tooling is actually a bad thing or not. And it's all about pragmatism. It's all about if you are confident enough in yourself to do a good design, then tooling is just another tool in your toolbox, and so on. So it's a very big topic.
Yep. The thing that I really like the most about what I've heard, you know, in your explanation of this is that last aspect of you're actually writing code that you're going to implement. I mean, it's going to implement the business requirements. It's going to get your customers what they need. And at the same time, you're building, you have that testable interface built in there that you can use. Because one of the common things that you hear, and not so much from developers and architects, the technical people on a project, it's when we start talking about building tests, especially test first, I'm going to build my test before I write the functional code. Management within organizations, that tends to throw up a red flag with them. Like, no, I'm not paying you to write tests, I'm paying you to write code. Now, that's short-sighted, and I mean, we all know that, right? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's a very real challenge that teams have out there, and this seems to be a good way to approach that, where you're actually getting the benefits of doing, of having the testing framework in place and having being able to say, yes, we are moving the project forward, we are moving the application forward.
Yeah, but it does take longer, and this is something that's really, people really need to understand. Writing tests, let's say you have a method called isLogin, okay, turns true false. You want to do at least a couple of tests against it, if not more. And let's assume you have 1,000 methods that you want to test in your project. Now you have 4,000, 6,000 tests if you're doing a thorough job. Mm-hmm. So the thing is, those tests take a long time to write. Mm-hmm. So suddenly, writing the code could take twice the amount of time it took longer before. And the thing to realize is that time is mitigated later, either in integration or with the maintenance or with release cycles. Release cycle can actually be faster, even though the coding cycle can be longer. But in the end, the release could actually be faster because everything that goes after coding can actually take less time because the code quality is better and the code is easier to understand, easier to maintain, it's easier to find bugs.
Right.
And when that happens, suddenly coding is not this huge task. Whenever you want to find a bug, it takes you 2 days. Yeah, you can actually prove that something works or it doesn't work.
Right.
Everything is testable. Someone tells you there's a bug here. You say, let's see if I can create a unit test that proves it. And if you can't, maybe the problem is not in the logic. It's maybe an integration problem and so on. The thing is, it does make releases faster, but it makes coding slower, and that's what most people don't realize. That you need to have more. It's not if you're short-sighted, that's all you're gonna see, and you're gonna pause in the middle. You have to let one release go at least and see what happens. Mm-hmm. It takes time, though.
Okay, all right, very good. So you've recently written a book.
Yeah.
You tell us a little bit about that.
I'm actually writing the book right now. It's called The Art of Unit Testing.
And
you can go to artofunittesting.com. You can download free chapters. The book is about, it's not about test-driven development, there are books about that. It's about what developers need to know to start writing unit tests that aren't crappy. Okay, there are a lot of books out there that teach you how to write unit tests. There are no books that teach you how not to write
unit tests. Quality unit tests that are going to achieve the goal. Yeah.
Because a unit test should have at least three main qualities to make sure that after 6 months in the project, you're not just going to stop writing tests because it takes too long and so on. And those three qualities are very simple. The tests have to be maintainable. This is one of the things that kills projects. Let's say you have a test against a class, and you have 50 tests against a class, and now you change the constructor of the class. So now 50 tests don't even compile. You have to change 50 tests. How do you handle that?
Great.
And there are ways to handle that. Yep. You know, refactoring the test code itself and so on. Making the test code readable so that people can actually change the test, understand why it breaks and so on. That includes naming conventions. And making sure you can trust your tests. If you don't trust your tests and your test fails, you're going to get this reaction. Oh, it's okay. It's supposed to fail. That's like the worst thing ever.
So I've heard that so many times, too. It's like, oh, I knew that was going to happen.
Yeah, it only fails every second time.
Yeah.
Worst thing can ever happen. Because there's going to come a time where the test is failing because it's telling you something real.
Mm-hmm.
And if you cannot trust your tests, you may as well not write them, may as well not run them. You just wasted time.
Yeah.
If you cannot trust your tests, they are not worth anything because you still would want to debug your code and so on. And you won't get any of the benefits. It's all about confidence. Now, test-driven development is when you write the tests. Unit testing is how you write them.
Right.
Okay, so that's the difference. That's what my book is focusing about.
Okay, great. And it's great because you're right. That's a gap because there are 101 books on writing unit tests and how to use the tooling.
Yep.
But there's enough rope there. People could easily hang themselves with unit tests. And
yeah.
Do you talk about at all in the book about the right level of unit testing? So that's the other thing, too, is I've seen people write unit tests to make sure that when a button is clicked, the event fires, and I mean down to the minutiae of that. Do you give some guidance into what the right things, the right approach, and the right things to test?
I usually I have a rule of thumb that says if it has logic in it, I would probably want to test it or move the logic somewhere else.
Okay.
So if there is an if statement, a switch, a loop, or something like that, probably I would want to test that because there is a possibility there's going to be a bug.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if the code is in the UI, I would probably move it somewhere else. And test somewhere else because UI is really hard to test.
Sure. Yeah.
I usually don't write tests against UI. It's still a problem. I don't feel it has been solved yet. I'm talking about WinForms. For ASP.NET, there are tools, a tool like Ivana, which is a new tool that allows you to test ASP.NET in process. There are tools you can use testable frameworks such as ASP.NET MVC.
Mm-hmm.
There's a big difference. Web forms versus ASP.NET MVC, which Microsoft just came out with. And the big difference is that one is highly testable, highly configurable, highly changeable, and maintainable. And the other is...
Exactly.
This covered in this.
Yes.
Basically.
Yeah. And that's going to be a very familiar view to a lot of people.
Exactly.
So, Roy, if people want to continue this conversation with you, how can they get a hold of you?
Well, first of all, there's my blog at icrealizable.com. I welcome any comments. I'm also on Twitter. It's Roy Osherov with an E in the end. I would welcome people to also read the book, download the first free chapter, buy millions of copies of the book later, and send me comments.
Okay, very good. Roy, thanks so much for joining me here today.
Thank
it was
you.
A great conversation. I appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
I'm Denny Boynton for ArtCast, and until next time, we'll see you. Thank you.